In a study done by the University of Virginia, participants were asked to sit by themselves in silence for 15 minutes with nothing but their thoughts to entertain them. There was one thing they could do, however. They had the option to shock themselves. In the end, 67% of men and 25% of women chose to shock themselves over sitting in silence with their own thoughts. One outlier to this was someone who chose to be shocked 190 times within 15 minutes. That wasn't counted in the median math. So if you couldn't tell already, we're talking about a concept and a practice that can seem absolutely foreign to a lot of Western Christians. So most of you are aware, and as Keith mentioned, I come from a Quaker background, and when I passed around more evangelical settings, I was looked at as an oddball because I love silence as a worship language. In fact, sometimes I was accused of being in a cult because somebody would look up a Quaker video on YouTube and see them sitting in quiet, and it was so different to them that it had to be a cult. This is traditionally used passage, though, in Quaker circles to explain the power of silence. In their perspective, God speaks in the stillness. And there's a comforting thought to this, that after Elijah flees for his life, considers suicide, God speaks softly to him and meets him where he's at. In response to this gentleness, Elijah surrenders his own control and power, becomes a mentor to Elisha the prophet later on. British Rabbi Jonathan Smucks offers this commentary. The supreme power cares for the powerless. The creator of life loves life. The voice that summoned the universe into being is still and small, hardly louder than a whisper. To hear God, you have to listen. Silence has been a way of connecting to God pretty much over the span of human history. And if you hopped across the street metaphorically to our Catholic siblings, you would hear about how silence has been practiced in more monastic communities and is encouraged in daily life. My own Quaker roots made me fall in love with silence, but the Quakers weren't the first ones to use it as a way to connect to God. There are several ancient church theologians who speak of the power of silent prayer and connection. Isaac of Nineveh wrote, "Love silence above all things. It brings you near the fruit which the tongue is too weak to interpret." John of the Cross said that silence is God's first language. Anabaptists also encouraged silent prayer in their early communities as part of sustaining spirituality. One of the slurs thrown against them was that they were monkish or new monastics. Several of the founders of Anabaptism were also coming from Catholic monastic backgrounds, so they took a lot of the silent meditation into their own Anabaptist way of life. In fact, when the Mennonites first came with the migration to Pennsylvania, they worshiped alongside Quakers in their worship spaces. And it wasn't the silence that made the church split, but because the Mennonites wanted clergy. So there's a mystic welcomeness and a silence stream within Anabaptism that's part of our own Mennonite DNA. But if this still sounds intimidating to you or odd, you're not alone. This is an intentional practice that often isn't observed in Western Christian spaces. However, this is a faith-sustaining discipline. This leads a bit to my first point, which is that an intentional discipline of silence helps to fight social and political despair. Every time we choose to practice silence, we're saying to the distractions and tensions of the world that they aren't God. In a world obsessed with overconsumption and noise, taking time to intentionally cultivate our inner lives is a radical act. Because, I've been known, like many people in my generation, to go down a rabbit hole of social media. But I do it in a way that's more academic, but that's what I just tell myself. But what's so fascinating to me is that so many influencers, and if you don't know what an influencer is, I envy you. rely on people believing that they have good, perfect lives in order to earn income. And what's especially fascinating to me is seeing these Christian influencers follow the same trend. I know a Christian influencer, for example, who spent their money buying followers for their Instagram and Facebook accounts so they could have a larger platform to sell because they could be perceived to be popular. This is tricky. I'm sorry. I've also known people who stopped attending churches because it's bad for their brand, quote unquote. Brand meaning their audience looking at their life on social media. Then there's the other side of the spectrum where there's a market for perpetual political outrage with podcasts and talk show hosts. I'm sure we've all met people who leave the news on 24/7, whether through talk radio or TV. When we practice silence, we are saying to those distractions that they are only that, distractions. That we worship a God who transcends all of that and leads us into a deeper, more meaningful life without needing an audience or material things. It also says we will not give in to the anxieties and fears of the era because we have a God that sustains us and leads us through. This leads me to the other point, which is that silence is a radical act of hope. As justice-minded Christians, we can have this tendency to immediately act on all the chaos that's happening around us. But if we don't have a spiritual base to draw from and a regular practice, our witness isn't particularly different, is it? We have to remember that even Christ had to withdraw into the wilderness for periods of silence and meditation. Again, speaking to Quaker history, the most radical ideas such as abolitionism, women in ministry, things that would make things equal in a capitalist society, those things came out of an observance of silence, corporately. Dr. Andrew Newberg, a neuroscientist, studies the effects of spirituality on the brain. And what he found was that even a meditation or silence practice of just 12 minutes a day grew empathy, larger appreciation of life, and led to deeper relationships with God. In one case, he wrote about a case where he was with a truck driver, and this truck driver struggled with a very severe depression. And when this truck driver started doing a regular meditation practice, within about 4 weeks, his life significantly improved. Because in the silence, we're forced to meet ourselves. We're forced into those innermost thoughts and feelings that distract us. But it's also in the silence that we can discover grace for all these things. Father Thomas Keating labels it as divine therapy for this reason. Father Thomas Keating was once actually encountered by someone who was complaining that they couldn't focus at all during centering prayer. They said they had at least 10,000 thoughts pop into their mind that distracted them from God. Thomas Keating smiled and said, "That's great. That's 10,000 opportunities to turn to God." And in 12-step spirituality, the 11th step states that the 12-stepper seeks on a daily basis conscious contact with God through meditation and prayer. The reason for this is because God's will for that person needs to be discerned, but it also realizes that when we encounter God in meditation, we have a larger service to the world. I go to a centering prayer group, for instance, most mornings, where people freely talk about the political climate we're in and how it relates to their own spirituality. They cite the group as an influence for their own personal activism and their efforts to do good. And there's always some type of comment made that without this practice, they couldn't handle what's going on in the world. I think on a wider scale, a practice of silence helps all of us in the same way. When I started taking Christianity seriously again as a teenager, what actually drew me back was silence. I really love loud and fast music. I still do. Please don't take this as an insult against punk rock. But that's what I was really into. And I would blast it a lot to distract myself. But when I encountered the Quaker community that I did in Denver, I was immediately introduced to something new. Because everyone I knew in the punk rock scene was running away from something and couldn't stand the silence. But I'll never forget the first time I encountered God that way. I had swimmer's ear, which I didn't understand why I had because I hadn't gone swimming. But I was also just absolutely miserable at that time. I was a high school dropout and had constant anxiety about life. In the silence, it's really hard to describe if you haven't experienced this, but I felt this embrace and warmness that I really hadn't felt before. The swimmer's ear didn't hurt as much, and the anxiety melted away. I discovered a God who was meeting me where I was at. And again, don't get me wrong, I love punk rock still. I should show you my vinyl collection if you're ever curious. I don't listen to it as much, but I have a fondness for the lack of art form that it is. I was hoping that would land. Okay. But when I started practicing silence more and more, the more mainstream evangelicalism actually confused me. When I looked at my peers who were worshiping, and I, you know, I went to an evangelical Bible college, all that, they would always talk about what was considered spirit-filled worship to them. And spirit-filled worship was often this noisy, very loud, you know, rock concerts, basically. And when I looked around at my peers, I just remembered all the people I knew in the punk rock scene who needed that loudness to drown out the silence. And I would always leave a little confused, not judgmental, just confused, because the way I was encountering God was so different. And then I would find out my peers would often leave their home churches for mega churches because of those rock concert experiences. So that's how I knew I'd never be a mega church pastor, long story short. So I'm not belittling you if you connect to God through Christian rock. Not at all. God connects to us in a variety of ways. But the point is that noise and loudness becomes its own idol sometimes. In the silence, we are invited into a deeper communion with God that enables us to love people clearer and more meaningfully. Because we learn that God loves us radically in those moments of vulnerability and quiet. I don't think it's a coincidence at all that many social reforms have come from contemplative streams of Christianity where they were forced to confront themselves in silence and prayer. Just like Elijah was forced to confront God in the stillness after coming to what he thought was the end of himself, we too meet God who is waiting for us gently to return to him and turn off the noisiness of the world. A lot of people have asked me how I maintain all the busyness of my life between Palestinian activism, doctoral student, and school, and writing. I can confidently say it's because I try to practice silence every morning. Both it's part of my creative writing routine, but also a deep part of my spirituality. I look at my workload, and I realize I have no other choice but to surrender it to God. I don't do this because I think I'm holier than other people, but because I've firsthand seen so many activists and well-intentioned people just burn out and doing good. I've especially seen in the Palestinian spaces I'm in right now. The horrors of the genocide in Gaza is causing many people to just give up. But giving up isn't an option for a Christian, not with this. So silence is there to sustain us, and God meets us there. And that's why I tell every activist and every nonprofit worker, every caring profession, that if there's no spiritual base, there is a huge likelihood they will burn out. So if you're in that space of frustration and despair from a current political climate, I want to gently remind you that God is there for you and waits for you in these moments of silence and prayer. If you're interested in this practice and want to learn more, LMC actually hosts a Tuesday night contemplative prayer group on Zoom. And then there's also a 12-step group that meets here every first and third Friday that's open to the public, where we use centering prayer as a practice. You don't need problems to go to that. You can just come in here. We do spiritual readings, and we talk about how God is working in our lives. It's always a refreshing experience for me. But whatever the case may be, whatever your relationship with silence is, know that the present Christ speaks to you today. Jesus suffers alongside us, mysteriously, and he waits for us both in the vulnerable communities we try to serve and in the silence. How will you receive him? And will you have the courage to believe that you are radically and dearly loved just as you are.